Earthquakes happening in California and Nevada. Some scientists say that we might be living in a simulation, and apparently the Little Mermaid is no longer a white redheaded girl. Well, this is what we're going to be talking about on Late Night with Joel for July 6th, 2019. What do you think? Get ready to call in and let me know. Here we go.
Please keep clear of the doors. You are delaying the departure of this train.
So much to talk about. A beautiful evening here in Denver, Colorado, with the sun setting over the Rocky Mountains. It is dusk, and the moon is but a wee crescent up there in the sky. If you could see what I could see, I'm just going to call it God's handiwork, because there ain't no artist alive could paint like this at this scale. It's just not possible. It's that beautiful. Anyway, Joel here. Late night, July 6th, 2019. The internet's only late night call-in talk show. Not on any regular schedule, but usually when I do it, it is around 9 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, which puts it at 11 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. And I guess still early. You know, 8 p.m. on the left coast, and that's where the action appears to be happening here these past couple days. And if you are out there in California or Las Vegas and you experienced the earthquakes, I think there's been three now, with the most recent being a 7.1 on the Richter scale. That is some scary stuff. If you're in California or in Vegas and experienced either one of those, I want to hear from you. The line is open. It's one line, but with multiple opportunities to call in. The number is 856-230-7500 when the show is live. For those of you listening in the replay, well, you can call there, but you won't get anything. But the show does go live on my Facebook page at facebook.com/JoelCom. Got three stories really I want to talk about tonight, but the first and foremost is what's happening out there in California. I hope everybody is safe and that there's not been any injuries so far, but there's definitely a lot of shaking going on with the earthquakes that have taken place out there. And, you know, I know for, you know, years, well, really my whole life, they've been saying the big one, the devastating earthquake might be happening because of the San Andreas Fault. And it's been 20 years since there's been an earthquake of the magnitude that that California just experienced. Of course, our Facebook page is lit up with people saying, did you feel that? Well, I didn't, because I'm in Colorado and we didn't have any earthquake out here. But for my friends in California, and I guess Las Vegas as well, you're still feeling aftershocks. Apparently there's an aftershock every minute. That is, that's some pretty scary stuff. The epicenter of the earthquake was in a town called Ridgecrest, and is a north and east of Los Angeles. So not quite halfway between Vegas and LA, maybe kind of close to there, but there was a 6.4 earthquake that happened on Thursday, and then on Friday, a one. And apparently, according to CNN, a lot of people in the town of Ridgecrest were sleeping on their sidewalks and in their driveways because they were afraid to be in their homes. And there has been an aftershock, an average of one per minute in the southern part of the state. More than 4,700 quakes have occurred since Thursday, according to the U.S. GS, the geophysicists there, the Geological Survey. They've got a website at the United States Geological Survey. It is USGS.gov, where they track these things. And if you look at California, they put pins, you know, at where these are felt. And there are so many dots on this page from all the places that they feel that, you know, the quake has tracked. It's pretty remarkable. So again, if you have experienced the earthquake, I want you to call and tell me what you experienced. I want to hear what this was like from your experience. The phone number is 856-230-7500. Don't be shy. I really want to know what this felt like for you. And I guess people in Vegas felt it as well. Hello to everybody that is joining me live in the room. Patricia, Christian, Jan, Sally, Kevin, Lucia, Jenny, Aaron, hi. Hope you're doing good. So I'm going to talk about this earthquake thing here a little bit more, and hopefully somebody will call in to share their experience, because I there's got to be somebody listening from California. But there's some photos of this that people have taken, and some of them, they just show, there's this one I'm looking at right here is a liquor store in Ridgecrest, and somebody took a picture, and the place is a wreck. I mean, there is broken bottles all over the floor and stuff, cigarettes, and I mean, it is a hot mess. Lots of damage. I don't know that I've heard that anybody has been seriously injured in this yet, but there's definitely a lot of structural damage that's taking place. Residents are saying walls have collapsed. Some highways have been shut down because of rock slides and cracks in the highway. There's a seismologist in California that's saying that the earthquakes, they kind of hit the Mojave Desert area, and they say that they're going to produce 30,000 quakes of magnitude one or greater over the next 6 months. It's scary stuff. Anyway, the governor of California, Governor Newsom, and our President Trump, they're working together. And, you know, for all of the conflict that they have, Governor Newsom said, there's one area where there's no politics, where we work extremely well together, and that is in our response to emergencies. So this is definitely an emergency. Yeah, Jenny, you are correct. A 6 or a 7 is serious. 6 or a 7 is a very serious, especially a 7. And here's the thing. When you go from a 6 to a 7, the way the Richter scale works, it's not, okay, from 6 to 7 is a +1 difference in magnitude. No, it is a 10x difference in magnitude. Every 1 point on the Richter scale is multiplied by 10 in its impact. So it is an exponential increase. It's not just, oh, this is one more. You know, as I'm sitting here tonight looking out the window and it's dark, there are still 2 days later after the 4th, there are fireworks going off was up here on the 4th, and it rained a lot, but the rain didn't stop the fireworks. And from my viewpoint, you were able to see just dozens of fireworks shows that went on throughout the night. And apparently there are still some going on tonight. In fact, I see 1, 2, 3 that I've spotted right now. So the celebration of America continues. Lisa says that Tony lives in Santa Paula, which is in Ventura County, and a DVD fell down. It was awful. Well, I guess it depends on, you know, did the DVD hit him on the head and knock some sense into him, Lisa? Because if, you know, if that's the case, then maybe it was a good thing. Yeah, you know, there's one newscast that I can't remember who it was, but the video was out there, and there's a male and a female anchorman and anchorwoman on there, and they're like looking around, and they're as they're talking to the cameras, they're concerned that the equipment there, the lights, might start falling from the ceiling. And so as they cut to commercial, you actually saw the woman get under the desk. You know, they were taking cover. So it's serious stuff. And stay safe out there, our friends in California. Jenny also says that people in the U.S. are used to hearing about the 8.0 in Asia. Japan is built for it, not L.A. I'm not sure why that is. I'm not sure if they were just more structurally aware as they were building in Asia, or if the San Andreas Fault is just so unpredictable that they can't build on it. Robert says that physicist Michio Kaku on CBS This Morning says there's a 100% chance of the big one happening in the LA area in the next 30 years. That's a pretty profound prediction there. A 100% chance. You know, there's nothing guaranteed in life except death and taxes to say 100%. Tony Blake is on. Tony, did you feel it? If you did, call in and talk to me. I want to hear. I've never experienced an earthquake. I've been in and around tornadoes since I was a boy, because I grew up in the Midwest, and then I spent 20 years in Tornado Alley in both Dallas, North Central Texas, and then Oklahoma. And I've seen the destruction that tornadoes can bring. And I've been in blizzards, having grown up, you know, off Lake Michigan in Chicago, and now living in Colorado. Of course, the blizzards that I saw in Chicago were worse, usually, than the ones I've seen here in Colorado. Now, if you're in the mountains in Colorado, that's a different story. But, you know, I've been through the worst snowstorms. I've been through the worst thunderstorms. And, but I've never experienced an earthquake. And I've always wondered, what does that feel like? And it must be a helpless feeling, a helpless sensation to be in an earthquake. I mean, what are you going to do? Just your whole world is shaking. It's not like there's something you can hold on to, because whatever you're holding on to is shaking as well. Yeah. It's got to be pretty crazy. If you want to call in and talk about it, the number is 856-230-7500. Your face will not be on video. My face isn't on video. Well, if you're watching on Facebook Live, there's a still of me on video. About 15 pounds ago, I look a little, my face is a little rounder than it is in that photo, but you get the gist. My hair is probably also a little grayer. I don't know. It's very possible that it is. So if you have experienced an earthquake and can tell me about it, call in. There's the number. It's right there. It's right in front of your face. 856-230-7500. Hey, Mike, how you doing? If you experienced the earthquake, I'd love to hear what that felt like for you. And there's the number on the screen that you can call in and talk to me, and I'll see that when you do. Anyhow, I've never experienced that. You know, I've been to California numerous times, and I will be out there again. I was just in San Francisco, a week or so ago. I'll be back in LA for Vid Summit. That's coming up soon. And so, you know, maybe I'd feel something when I was out there. I hope not. Sounds a little scary, actually. Hi, Laura. Good to see you. Hey, Kanan. Nice to see you. Kanan says that earthquakes let you know just how small you really are. Yeah, I would imagine that they do. Just nothing to hold on to. You know, I've seen the tornadoes, and, you know, there's that freight train sound when a tornado goes by. And I've been fortunate to never have been hit by a tornado, but I can't tell you how many times I've had to take shelter. And, you know, you grab the weather radio and take it with you because you need to be aware of when it's safe to come out. Will Armstrong is there where you're in Sacramento, California. Is that Sacto? Is that what that is? Or is Sacto an actual place? No earthquakes felt there by you. That's good. Yeah, so I guess people are on alert. Laura's terrified of tornadoes. I am too. I do not like tornadoes. The last house I lived in Edmond, Oklahoma, we put a storm shelter into the garage. It's like a prefab shelter. They dig out the space and you go in, you slide the cover and you lock yourself in. And Tony, talk to me, buddy. How you doing? You surviving?
Hey, how are you, Joel?
I'm good, man. So you're in LA?
Yes, I'm in Southern California, in Ventura County, which is above Los Angeles.
And did you feel it?
We felt it on the fourth. We had earthquake. It wasn't too bad. I mean, I was asleep and I felt it, and I went back to sleep. But then on the fifth, I was at a comedy improv show there at about 8:30 in the morning, and bam, we got hit. Ridgecrest was bad, but that's outside around the Mojave desert. I live 10 miles away from the coast. It was just basically a rolling, it might be rolling, but other than that, everybody left, you know, just outside in the parking lot. And then everybody came back and they did their show.
So, you know, this is not your first rodeo. You've lived out there a while. You've experienced earthquakes before. Are you concerned with the frequency of these now and there being a 7.1?
No, we can't stop it. So, you know, I was, well, let's see, 1971, I had my one of my first big earthquake. It was 6.9 in Sylmar, just above Los Angeles, and that was bad. We had a hospital that had been problems and in fact some have destroyed. The same thing with the freeways, the bridge fell. Then in 1994, we had the Northridge earthquake, and I think that was almost a 7, and it was really bad. Although my friend and I made t-shirts and we sold it and made a lot of money. So But that's the big ones. Well, every once in a while, I mean, all the time, they've had 1,800 shocks there since the earthquake about 2 days ago. But it's not as big, you know, 2, 3, 4 every once in a while. But that one was a big one, 7.1, and Ridgecrest had big problems. I mean, they've had fires and pipes had been broken, and actually Albertson in Ridgecrest, the ceiling fell. So,
wow. Well, I just, you know, Lisa mentioned in the chat that you sound remarkably well. I know you've been through some medical issues, and you doing okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. You know, I had a stroke 3 years ago, and my legs, arms, fingers, I'm fine. It was just when my brain, I had a thing called aphasia. I couldn't speak. Back then, it actually happened at the Magic Castle when I had the stroke. I felt it, and thank God they sent me to Cedar Sinai, which is a very big, good hospital there. I spent 15 months getting speech therapy. And my writing and read is fine. My speaking is a little bit different. I'm probably at about 87%. But I still do shows, you know, and read as much as possible, you know. I've read your first the last book of yours,
The Fun Formula,
it's most people will come up to me and when I do at the Magic Castle, and when I do a show, people will come up and say, you didn't have a stroke, right? You're just pretending. And it's like, no, I had a stroke. That, see, when I speak fast, I'm fine. I'm like at 99% because of my remember the script and everything else. But when I do it slow, I have to look at the different words and language, and that might have a little bit of a problem. But when I'm fast, no problem.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're doing well, and find something to hang on to there. Hopefully the quakes will subside, and it's good to talk to you, my friend. Thanks for calling in.
No problem. Thank you.
Cheers, Tony. Take care. Mr. Tony Blake. And also here on the line, we have, I believe this is Mike Stelzner. Mike, is that you?
It is, Mr. Joel Kamm.
How you doing?
Saturday night. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's a beautiful night tonight. Absolutely wonderful. And I'm still seeing fireworks going up. I'm not sure what's going on out there. Some people might have slept through
You're
the
seeing
4th.
Fireworks? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, I love seeing fireworks. It's a good thing.
Oh, I didn't know if you were having some sort of after visual kind of craziness going on. So I know you were talking about the earthquake.
Yeah.
I'd love to share a little bit about what happened for me. So I'm in San Diego, and I was watching TV on the couch in one room with one of my kids, and my wife and the other kids are in the other room, and they're all yelling at me like, what's going on? And I'm all, hey, did you feel that? And we could feel, basically kind of felt like I was in one of those vibrating chair kind of things. Except it went on for a while, probably 2 to 3 minutes. It didn't really bother me because obviously, you know, like I have a ceiling fan above me and I could see the little the little light switch thing that hangs off it was kind of rocking back and forth a little bit, but it was nothing like some of the other earthquakes that I've been in. But considering that they were saying it registered in Vegas and it registered down in Mexico, this is a pretty darn big earthquake.
Yeah.
I spent some time in the morning watching this guy on YouTube named Dutch Sense, who is like a, earthquake specialist. And he was talking about how the earthquake was taking place, believe it or not, on an ancient volcano area in California. Did you know we had volcanoes in California?
I didn't. Where? Like what part of California?
So right, literally where the earthquake was is an ancient volcano. And he was showing on Google Earth, you could get the coordinates off of United States Geological Survey, and you can pop them into Google Earth and zoom in, and you can actually see all of these cones all over the place. And supposedly where it happened, they were doing, they have a steam, what do you call those energy things where they take steam and turn in turbines or something like that? Mm-hmm. So I guess they're drilling steam turbines into the ground right where this happened. So fascinating to think that this could have been caused by man. You know, some people are saying fracking, which is, I guess, somehow extracting oil from the ground. And others are saying, hey, they could be coincidental or probably not, that this is an area where they're drilling into these cones. These ancient volcano areas, and literally trying to capture the steam to turn it into energy.
Wow.
So fascinating. Yeah. And the prediction is there's going to be potentially one more bigger. It's like a 5% chance, according to the research I read, that there will be a bigger one happening, which is kind of interesting. So you've never experienced an earthquake, huh?
No.
Do you feel this one, or are you too far away?
I'm too far away. I feel more just by shaking in my seat right here. You know, I've been close enough to tornadoes that I know I never want to be, you know, any closer, and been in, you know, blizzards that drop feet of snow and whiteouts and, you know, thunderstorms that you have to pull the car over because you can't see. But I've never experienced an earthquake.
I think that I would much rather experience an earthquake than a hurricane.
Yeah.
And even a tornado, because I've experienced tornadoes. Those are pretty scary.
Terrifying.
So, and I have never been at the epicenter, obviously, of a 7.1 earthquake. I might change my tune.
Yeah. 7.1 is bad. Well, hopefully there will be no big one. And the geologists and there, you know, this one guy who's predicting 100% chance within the next 30 years, you know, that could be in our lifetime. We don't want that in our lifetime or in our kids' lifetime. You know, that kind of destruction that when you get that the big one, then you've got serious loss of life and injury. And we don't want that.
Yeah, I mean, thank goodness they're happening in very remote areas. I mean, can you imagine if this happened underneath Los Angeles? That would have been a totally different situation.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, buddy, always good talking to you.
Okay.
And thanks for checking.
Thank you, man. Well, let's catch up. I'm going to be at VidCon.
Excellent. I will not, but let's have a phone call soon offline.
Oh, I thought you said you were going to be at VidCon. I guess I misunderstood.
No, I'm going to be at Vid Summit, at Daryl's event. I'm speaking out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I'll definitely be at that one as well, so we'll catch up there.
And I'll also be
talk
at
later, brother.
I'll be at Podcast Movement, too, if you're going to be out there.
Yeah, I probably won't make it this year because where is it? In Florida, right?
Yep, Orlando, where there's no earthquakes but some really horrible humidity.
Hey, can I ask about this show or should I ask you offline?
No, go,
there's
go,
other callers.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. Talk to me. Like this isn't, it's unusual. Like I started out on Facebook on my phone and I'm like, how the heck am I going to remember the phone number to call in? So I went on my computer. What spawned you to do a traditional call-in show where you have to actually use old-fashioned technology like telephone?
I love late night radio. Always did, you know, growing up I used to listen to late night radio and the, you know, people would call in and talk about whatever, and I thought, how do I combine all the technology that I have access here to? So, you know, besides my ATR 2100 mic, I've got hooked up to my Rodecaster and my soundboard. I've got an Android phone and I'm using Call-In Studio to screen the calls. And then I'm using BeLive to push it out to Facebook. And I just, you know, I wanted to see, could I put all these pieces together and use Facebook Live in a way that others aren't, but that would make something old new again? And that's, you know, I love it. It's great. I get to talk to people. I don't have to be on camera, and it's something that people can enjoy passively. And then I take this and I upload it to the Joel Comm Show on my podcast feed. So people that want to listen later, they can listen later. Just another experiment in the long line of experiments.
How many times have you done this?
I would say this is probably my fifth or sixth time.
Very cool.
It took the first three or four to work out the bugs, to figure out, oh, why can't people hear my caller? Or why aren't they hearing the music? But I've got it all figured out. There is a system in place to make it work. And I'm just having fun because that's what I do.
Awesome, brother. Well, it was good calling in and being part of the big, fun experiment.
Always. I wish you the best. Talk to you later, brother. Mr. Michael Stelzner of the Social Media Examiner and Social Media Marketing World. Shout outs to others in the room. Justin, Jenny, good to see you. Hey, Mr. Perry Belcher, good to see you as well, my friend. Hope you're doing well. A couple other stories that I want to talk about tonight. We'll move on from the earthquake. But I came across this story on NBCNews.com. There is an article in the science section, and the headline is, "Are we living in a simulated universe?" Here's what scientists say. If we're living in a simulation, then the cosmos that we're observing is just a tiny piece of the totality of physical existence. It's nothing new that somebody has posited, you know, especially in science fiction, the Matrix, right? The whole premise of the Matrix was that the reality that people were living wasn't reality, but it was actually a computer program, and everybody that was in the Matrix was a slave to these alien beings. They were part of the machine that powered their civilization, and everybody was in this little pod, and they were plugged into the Matrix, and they were fed this reality. And by being alive, they powered the world for these aliens. And Neo, the One, if he was indeed the One, was to come along and rescue people from the Matrix to show them the truth, whether they wanted to see it or not. They were offered the red pill or the blue pill. You can do without the Matrix sequels. They really could have stopped after the first one. I mean, if you really want to see the whole thing, it gets even more complex. And I think maybe it makes sense. I don't know. But the first one, if you haven't seen it, it is one of the most amazing sci-fi films of all time. And so anyway, this story on NBC News posits the simulation hypothesis that we could be in a virtual reality game of some kind. I have somebody knocking at my door. I think it's my Instacart delivery. So you guys hold on just a moment. It was exactly as I thought. I love Instacart. They bring me my groceries. It's a beautiful thing. Told them if I didn't answer the knock, just leave them. But I managed to hear the knock on my door with my headphones on. So, oh yeah, where was I? Alternate universes. Living in a simulation. I don't know. It's a possibility. Does it really matter? I guess that's the big question. Is, unless we were slaves, you know, to some other civilization that was using our brain power and our heartbeat to power their civilization. I mean, this is the experience we have. This is all we know. Maybe we really are on the riding on the back of a turtle that is cruising through the universe at a million miles an hour. I don't know. Terry Pratchett, Discworld. Could be. You don't know. Aaron says this commercial break brought to you by Instacart. See, I don't have any commercials for the show. There's not enough listeners to have commercials. But I'm glad that you guys are here. I am. I mean, I dig it. Somebody's here, though. Let me see who's calling in right now. Who have I got?
Hey, it's Kurt. How are you, dude?
What's happening, Kurt?
Oh, man, I'm enjoying your show, actually. This is the second time I listened in.
So. Yeah, actually, you're like surprised. You know, I'm listening to Joel, and it's actually okay. I thought it would be crap, but here I am.
No, man, I always expect everything you do to be amazing, and I started getting really interested when you, well, earthquakes are interesting to me because I'm in the zone over here, but also, you know, simulations, and it kind of has a vibe of what kind of, you know, put me on my own intellectual pursuits is like listening to the radio, actually. I feel like there's a lot more to it, and people should be doing more content like this. I really believe that.
Well, that's, you know, I think that there's something lacking when, you know, there isn't this proliferation of call-in talk radio anymore. Not as many people listen to the radio. Well, where are the broadcast channels? Well, you know, Facebook, YouTube. It's where people are consuming content, but you could only broadcast Facebook Live audio if you're broadcasting on your mobile device. But if you want to do something more professional, you've got to get creative and figure out how do I put these pieces together. And this is a format that that I missed, and clearly you're not the only one who, you know, I'm not the only one who missed it. You enjoy it as well. So you're in the zone. Did you feel the earthquake?
I did, man. The other one at like 10 a.m. PST, that one woke me up out of my sleep. So, and it, you know, it, I haven't felt something like that since I remember the Northridge quake. It was really big and pretty devastating. And there's just something that feels really different about what's going on right now.
Why? What's different?
I did read about, man, it just feels really unstable, and it's probably just because I'm kind of scared. It's just like a fear kind of response. But like, I had people that I know that live locally texting me saying that they're gonna like drive to Arizona in their van and like leave from the area and shit like that. That I'm just not used to hearing that. So it just felt different this time.
You know, one of the stories that I picked up on, I'm going to try and find it again. I think I saw a link to it on Drudge, was about the geysers in Yellowstone. There's a surge in Yellowstone geyser activity, a record number of eruptions are taking place. And I'm wondering, you know, how much does that have to do with what's going on there in the fault line?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting topic. Like one book I read that kind of opened my eyes about earthquakes, earthquake prediction and instrumentation was a book called The Signal and the Noise by Nate Silver. He was the guy who predicted a lot of the Obama elections and then did really bad job during the Trump elections, but he's kind of an expert in predictions and prediction related stuff, like prediction markets, right? And the thing that I gleaned from that book was that pretty much everybody trying to predict earthquakes is just failing at it. And like, so it kind of trained me to be really skeptical of, you know, building any kind of theory around whether an earthquake is going to happen or not. Like, it's just such a hard thing to predict. And the earth is such a complex organism that I don't really try to speculate on when it's going to happen. It reminds me of the crypto markets, maybe. Like, I just feel like, how can you, like, even that is, it's so simple compared to, like, you know, how the earth works.
Right. You know, I could call Bitcoin going up or down better than I could, you know, based on reading the charts. But the earthquakes, I mean, think about being a meteorologist, let alone a geologist. You know, they're just trying to predict what's going to happen tomorrow. And I mean, they said here in Denver on July 4th, we were going to have a 50% chance of thunderstorms for an hour and then 40% chance. And by 8 o'clock, the rain would be gone. Well, it rained all night and didn't just rain. I mean, it thunderstormed. And that was just the forecast from the National Weather Service for that evening. And they couldn't get it right. So how are you supposed to know when the tectonic plates are going to shift?
Yeah. And then it's even more complex than tectonic plates. And so I think this feeds into a deeper narrative of, like, when I first started studying astronomy back in the day, I think I was 16 or something. I had this really great teacher, and he was talking about how astronomy, how they're kind of tied to, like, astrology and what astrology really is. And he was talking about the history of how these court astrologers were really, they were relied on for information about weather at first. And one of the ways that they got the weather was just riding horses into neighboring provinces and then bringing that information back. So it was kind of like an information superhighway. And that's kind of how these dudes attained power, was by saying, look, like, this thing's going to happen. And people saw them as, like, wizards, you know what I mean? And I think that that's kind of what's going on with a lot of the prediction stuff today, whether it's crypto or weather or you know, earthquakes or whatever. It's just people attain a certain level of power by saying that they believe something's going to happen. They draw a lot of attention to themselves. So I'm always just, like, really skeptical on that.
Mm. Well, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Also, you mentioned the whole idea of us living in a simulation. I know you've probably seen the whole Matrix trilogy and have probably pondered on this. What do you think, if you were just going to set a percentage, what do you think the likelihood, realistically, that what we're experiencing is a simulation is?
Yeah, man, it's a really deep topic, man. Like, and honestly, like, I don't know. I don't know what the probability would be, but, you know, I'm tempted to say any number. I'm tempted, like, to say zero, and I'm also tempted to say 100%. And I think there's many, and there's many different kinds of simulations, man. Like, I've been really into flat Earth theory. Like, it's kind of like I've been a fan of it recently, because I feel like flat Earth theory is a really good exercise for people that aren't really into simulation theory. Like, the Matrix might be a little too deep, but flat Earth theory is sort of like simulation theory 101. It explains a simple concept that anybody can really understand by observing the world. Whereas the Matrix, it's like, man, am I in a computer? I don't fucking know. Like, that's a far stretch.
So wait, are you entertaining? Are you saying that you think thinking about the flat Earth theory is interesting just because it creates a model for thinking about things differently, or because you're buying it?
Yeah, I don't buy it, but I like, I don't believe in that. I think that, you know, the science that, you know, there's too much science that just contradicts it, but I do love it as an exercise. I think that it, you know, how do I say this in a not a controversial way? I think that, you know, people that might think that the Matrix is a little too deep for them might find flat Earth theory a good primer on on what a simulation theory is. It's like maybe there's some other view of reality that could be very true, that it, we're not really thinking about constantly because we're born in this, like, you know, the Earth is round centric reality, right? Because this is what simulation theories are about. Like, you know, I was raised in a Christian simulation theory that, you know, eventually I kind of just started thinking about it, and I thought, you know, like, what if, you know, gods aren't, you know, creating the fabric of reality constantly, and, you know, what is that? And so it's almost like just becoming an atheist is a way of being, you know, getting involved in simulation theories. And there's all different kinds of, you know, quote unquote matrices, right? Like, we live in a sugar eating matrix where everything we eat is sugar. Like, there's all these different kinds of simulation theories, right? But what I'm seeing right now is that it reminds me of, like, Mario Brothers, right? The video game.
I'm a Mario. It's how, like, so?
Yeah. So think about Mario. I like to think about the Mario analogy when it comes to simulation theories. It's like, Mario is in a simulation, clearly, right? Like, we can fucking see it when we play the game, and we're controlling him, right?
Right.
And Mario's level of consciousness is very low. Like, he's not Mario is not a conscious thing. He's like some bits in a computer somewhere, right?
He is not aware. He has one job, and that is to stomp on the Goombas.
Yeah. And so, like, he's not aware or whatever, but it's just a fun analogy, right? So if, like, how far off would Mario be from understanding the nature of the reality that he's in, right? Like, it's so completely far off from him to understand it that, like, he would first have to attain some level of consciousness, which might happen. I mean, Mario's become smarter over the years. I'm pretty sure the Mario algorithm that's driving the Mario Kart is smarter than the one that was making him stomp the Goombas, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But my way of thinking is that whatever person who's living inside of a reality, if the simulation is, you know, created correctly, is that Mario is so far off from recognizing that he's even in a video game, he doesn't even have consciousness, that it kind of brings this harmony to that simulation, right? And that's a kind of simulation. And I think that if we were living in a simulation, that however far Mario is from realizing that he's in a video game is how far we are off from realizing that our, you know, physical universe is some kind of, you know, we could even be further off than Mario would be. And so that's why part of me wants to say that it's 100% that we're in a simulation, but we would never be able to recognize it. We don't have the tools available. We're so far off from the tools that we could never realize it. But another part of me wants to say 0%, because I feel like maybe we haven't started to build these simulations yet. Like, Mario Brothers is the beginning of a simulation that we will build, and that those simulations will be true, and some character in a game will be asking the same question that we are right now.
You can't hear this because you're on the phone with me, but I've brought up some Mario music to play in the background as you've been talking to kind of set the stage.
Nice. Yeah.
I'm a Mario. I'm going to win. Yeah. Mario doesn't have the awareness, and, you know, you would think he would learn all Bowser's tricks, because Bowser keeps doing the same damn thing. And he always loses, right? Because Mario always gets the princess again.
And maybe that's the point of our video game. Like, the other day I wrote some posts about, like, how scientists are people who are just kind of searching for Easter eggs in physical reality. And I feel like, you know, if we are in a simulation, it's almost like the point of our simulation then would be to discover the proof for a simulation, right? But if we're as far off as Mario, then it's probably a wasted effort, I would say. But maybe we can build on the science from before to finally, like, and part of me also wants to say that a simulation is 100%, because we don't even understand what the nature of our simulated reality is, right? So it's like we're already in a simulation, which is reality. We don't even understand reality itself. So that's kind of cool.
Right. I'm, you know, I'm fortunate if I wake up in the morning and don't screw up my day, right, in this simulation.
Yeah.
True story.
But yeah, dude, I'm glad that you do this show. It's amazing, dude. I want to do this kind of stuff, and I'm interested in the tech too behind what you're doing.
Well, let's have a call offline and I'll share more of that with you.
Yep, yep. Cool. Right on, Joel.
Thanks, Kurt.
I'm gonna bounce off.
Have a good night, brother.
Kurt, you too.
Kurt Braggett bringing the deep questions tonight, and a little Mario thrown in there just for good measure. So let's see, we've covered the earthquake and we've covered the simulation. Oh, one more story that I promised you we would hit up tonight. And this is the controversy of the evening and is actually deeply controversial to some, to me. Well, I'll tell you my opinion in a moment. But out of all of the films that the Walt Disney Studios have put out over the years, what's your favorite? And I'm not talking about the Pixar Disney stuff either. I'm talking about like as far back as Snow White and then as far advanced as the films that they've made that aren't Disney Pixar animated films. I especially think about the hand-drawn films before they went digital. So there was a golden age of videos, and then there was a resurgence of films that Disney did when I was, I want to say, in my 20s and forward. You know, that was when Beauty and the Beast came out and The Lion King, which are both Disney classics. But the one that set off the new generation of Disney animation that was a resurgence for Disney was The Little Mermaid. Under the Sea, Yaman. Still my favorite to this day. I think that film has it all, including a rebellious daughter who was then rewarded for being rebellious. But here's the story there. You know, everything old is new again. There's no more original ideas, you know, just like they remade Beauty and the Beast, the classic cartoon, which needed no updating, but they turned it into, they remade it, and then they remade they're remaking The Lion King, allegedly looking like a live action film. I don't know why, because they can't be creative. They just want to capitalize on the successful franchises they've had. Well, they are remaking The Little Mermaid. True story. Oh, yeah, and they remade Aladdin. I mean, look, Will Smith is a genie. I'm sure he's entertaining, but he's not Robin Williams. Where is the originality? Why just go for the money grabs? Because they're in the business of doing business, I understand. But they're remaking The Little Mermaid. And of course, The Little Mermaid in the film is, she's a Caucasian, and she's got this red hair. And she's, all that good stuff. Well, apparently there have been reactions to a change in the look of the Little Mermaid for the live action version that they are shooting, because the girl that they have cast, I think she is of African American descent, and she has black hair. And so, which I have absolutely no problem with. I don't care. I think that this girl, her name is Halle Bailey, and she's this beautiful young girl that just has an incredible voice. And the article that I'm reading here from the director said that Halle possesses a rare combination of spirit, heart, youth, innocence, and substance, plus a glorious singing voice. And yet, people on Twitter, some people are freaking out because Ariel was initially white and they've cast a black girl to be her. So what? I mean, did they cast her because she's black, or did they cast her because she just has the character? I really wish we lived in a world where everybody would pay attention to what Dr. Martin Luther King said. That we would judge people by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. It's amazing when you study biology, when you see how much of what we are made of is the same, and that skin pigmentation is such a small part of what makes us different, and yet we choose to focus on that one thing. And so some of the comments on Twitter literally makes no sense. Last I checked, Ariel is a redhead. If Princess Tiana was cast as a white female, the entire world would be up in arms. Maybe. Another person said, y'all respect all the original princesses' looks and all the live action so far and decide to ruin Ariel? WTF. Keep it classic or nothing. And then there was this. Okay, I'm definitely not watching the live action movie. It shouldn't even be called The Little Mermaid because that is not Ariel. I don't think it's a big deal. I just don't. I mean, this is a beautiful young girl that the director felt nailed the role, has the voice. Who cares what color she is? Just don't know why it matters, especially when you look under the sea, man, and all the fishes down there, all so many different colors, man. I mean, it's so colorful under the sea, and the corals and the striped fishes, and they're yellows and reds and blues and purples and reds and whites. And so The Little Mermaid's got a different skin color. I don't know. I don't think it's a big deal. That's just me, though. What do I know? I don't know. I know some things, one or two things. Well, I do know this. I know that I appreciate you listening, joining me for late night. This has been some great discussion tonight. Grateful for the call-ins that we had, for the engagement in the live chat room, and I'm grateful for those that listen to the replay on my podcast. I'm a big fan of repurposing content. You know, we're going to do the show. Why not record it and put it out for people to listen and take on the go with them? In fact, those of you that are listening to the replay on my podcast, maybe you should come on over to my page at facebook.com/JoelCom and think about joining the show live. Be a part of the action, because I know that you've got something to say. Everybody has something to say. And in this show, I give you the opportunity to say it. Well, that's going to do it for tonight. Thanks for listening. Hope everybody enjoys the rest of their weekend. It's the one thing about doing a show that's dated is if you're listening and it's midweek, you're like,
weekend? How is it the weekend? It's Wednesday, idiot. Don't you know?
You don't know. Quick shout outs to those who joined later in the show. Bruce, good to see you. Dave, always a pleasure. Layla, thanks for stopping by. Into the throngs and throngs of you that didn't join the chat room or say something, glad that you are here as well. Just going to kind of let the music run out. Everybody have a good one, and